We're holding over here in the sugya of bankruptcy. Tonight, the attempt is to focus on bankruptcy vis-a-vis the dini de machus dina. Last week, just very quickly, I want to mention a couple of points from last week. Last week, we had two ways of justifying bankruptcy in halacha. One based on a premise known as yush, where you have a situation where the one who's owed the money is completely miyayish from ever seeing that money again. He says, I'll never see the money again. To which even that is not so pashit. We mentioned the Mechab and the Ramah. It's not so simple if Yush really works. Now, I was talking to someone who told me that, let's say for tuition, schools, even if they'll say the words miyayish, first of all, they're not. And secondly, they keep the debt around. Because this way, if they want to show value, they'll always keep the debt to be able to show, look, we have debt that's owed to us, so we have value. So even if yeshiva claims they're miyayish, I'm not so sure they can play both ways. They can't tell you we were miyayish and then keep it around to show that they have value. So that might not work. An interesting shaila that I heard b'shem Reb Heineman, I heard from Reb Heineman. Reb Heineman said, he talked about the following shaila. Let's say someone has an aunt. Nice to show you, an aunt who's not religious. She has one son and a bunch of religious nephews. So what this woman wrote in her will was, I want to leave half my estate to my child and the other half of my estate to my nephews be Yerusha. Now from a Torah point of view, there's no such Yerusha to a nephew. There's only one Yerusha, and that goes to a child. It goes to a son. There's no Yerusha to daughters really, and there's no Yerusha to a nephew. So the question that Rabbi Heinemann was discussing is, how does this work now for the firm nephews? As far as they're concerned, that will is useless because it's not binding in Jewish law. But they were given this money by their cousins, the nephews. What do they do with this money? So he said he brought the shaila to both Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Eliashiv, and they both ruled that the firm nephews are allowed to keep the money based on yish. Explained Rav Heineman in the name of Rav Moshe Eliashiv that since the non-religious Jews, they don't care about halach. They go with secular law. And secular law, the will stands on its own. So therefore, they're miyayish. So it's interesting that here Rav Eliashiv and Rav Moshe use the premise of yish to justify a removal of money that's really owed to them. We talked about yish and achayiv. Here they're saying that Rav Moshe and Rav Eliashiv held that you can use yish because as far as you're concerned, I work with secular law. I'm not a religious Jew. I don't know anything about Beis Din. All I know is what they tell me in court. In the court, they show me a will. The will says half to the nephews and half to the son, and therefore that is binding. So we just touched upon this last week. When exactly is yish a viable option, and when is yish not a viable option? The second thing we talked about last week, which I want to spend just a very small amount of time tonight, was we said another justification, which is many Achrayim discuss, is another way to justify bankruptcy is based on a premise called Minag HaMakim. Or minig hasoichim. When two people go into a business deal together, they go with the normal business understandings of what's accepted at that time at that community. We mentioned it's based on the Mishnah Bar Metzia. The Mishnah Bar Metzia says that if you want to hire a worker to work from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., that doesn't work. Because minig hamakim is, again, unless you speak out explicitly, but if you just hire a worker and he says, no, I go like the normal rate, 9 to 5, you go with minig hamakim. So the argument that we presented last week was if there's such a thing called minig ha-seichrim, therefore every single time I go into a business deal with you, I know there's a possibility that you're going to file for bankruptcy and I will lose all my money. I'll dask in, I go into the business deal. That's just the way the business deal goes. Interestingly enough, in 1992, Rav Herschel Schechter gave a shir, and he presented this argument very strongly. He thought this is a very good reason to justify bankruptcy. In a recent shir that he gave either in 2017 or 2018, where he wasn't so keen on this idea of using that as a premise. We'll get to hopefully later tonight what's his angle on justifying bankruptcy. But at least in 1992, he was very masking to this idea. And Reb Heineman is very into this idea, that the reason why bankruptcy works from a halachic standpoint is because that's what happens in business. When you go into business with people, you know that there's this thing called, at least in corporate business, there's this thing called bankruptcy. You know it, I know it, we all agree to it, and therefore that's binding completely from a halachic standpoint. However, just very quickly, number two, in the Sefer Pesachei Choshen from Rabbi Blau, he raises an issue with this heter. He raises it, as does Rabbi Osher Weiss. I was searching a lot for who discusses bankruptcy. I said to myself, it's got to be a tshuva somewhere in Minchas Asher. So lo and behold, Rabbi Osher Weiss, of course. If anyone's going to talk about something this you know, we'll call it contemporary, it's going to be in Rav Asher Weiss, and he has a very long piece of it in Chelik Beis, Simen Kuf Chafei. He has a very lengthy discussion where he discusses bankruptcy also. If you want to look about bankruptcy from in Hebrew, the way it's called today, it's called Pshitas Regel. That's what they call bankruptcy in Hebrew. It took me a while to figure that out. You know, I was, you know, trying with the Beis Aleph bankruptcy that way. That's how Rav Moshe writes it in the Tshuva. But it's much, much harder to Google to my Eitzer HaChacham and search it that way. But I found Pshitas Regel is a term that they use.
Pshitas
Regel. That's the term they use for bankruptcy. So, I'm not sure how that means bankruptcy. It means to spread your foot. I don't know how that came, the term in modern Hebrew, or at least in literature, to be referred to as bankruptcy. But that's what they use. That's at least the heading under Rav Asher Weiss's Tshuva in Minchas Asher. So the Pischei Choshen, Rabbi Blau, has an issue with being samech on this heter. The issue that he raises is, in number one, he writes like this, he says, not so fast. Not everything has what we call minhag ha-medina. Now, every rule and every detail is always accepted? Not always. He says, what's the likelihood of bankruptcy? I understand. Working hours and minimum wage. Those are all given across the board very often all the time. But something like bankruptcy, how common and how frequent is it that someone is going to go bankrupt? Therefore, he writes that the Ramah points out, you can't tell me that we went into the business deal expecting the unusual to occur. So, therefore, argues Rabbi Blau, maybe because bankruptcy is not as common, even though we mentioned last week that almost over about a little under 800,000 people filed bankruptcy just in 2017. So it's not that uncommon, but I guess it's not as common as something like minimum wage or other things. So he's arguing, and Rav Asher Weiss presents the same argument, that maybe, that although it's called minag ha-seichrim, maybe something like bankruptcy is not enough common to make it binding.
We don't say there's minimum welcome to charge interest, or we can charge interest. Why is it that in the country?
Right, because that's if we have a pre-existing rule somewhere else. In the rules of Mominus, when it comes to Mominus, you have the right to make any condition you want, except for something that's against the Torah, like ribbis. That is, it's more complicated how to do that. So over here, when two people go into a business agreement, they're all assuming that I know that you know that this is the givens and this is the rule, and I'll ask, can you sign on the dotted line?
So I'm doing it within a local context of saying you owe me money.
No. So that's what we mentioned. That minig, what we call minig ha-seichrim, the way Moshe writes in the Tshuva, is not, you're not thinking like a Jew. When you go into a business deal with another Jew, you're thinking as two Americans, not as two Jews. That's what Moshe pointed out in Igros Moshe. So argues Rabbi Blau, and so does Rav Asher Weiss. So maybe one can make the argument. That's only if it's something very, you know, when two people go into a business deal, they think about the most common, often things to happen. How often is a bankruptcy?
It shouldn't depend on frequency. Going public. Not that frequent,
right?
Private companies, but we know it's.
So that's what Ramosha Heinemann's argument is. Everyone knows there's such a thing called bankruptcy. Who doesn't know bankruptcy? Who lives in this country today that's doing anything in the business world that's not aware of this other thing called bankruptcy? You have to know it. He doesn't believe there's a side in the world that you can't know about it. Now, I would argue it's not that they don't know about it. They know about it, but they're not thinking that it's going to happen. So when they're going into their business agreement, it's not on their radar. So if it's not on their radar, it's hard to believe it's going to be binding. That's the argument that Rabbi Blau and Rav Asher Weiss bring up. Rav Asher Weiss kind of shoes it away in number two. Rav Asher Weiss writes, "V'oy nira debetkufaseinu shekol olam kulei kikvar katanu." So Rav Asher Weiss, we're all like one big city. We all know what's going on. It's a different world today. It's not like, you know, a major event in one city took, you know, a year to get to the next city. We know, we're in the know. If one company files bankruptcy, you'll know about it the next day. You'll read the newspapers, it'll be out there. Says Rav Asher Weiss, V'adim yodiu mashikari mikta mikata oilam bat katzeu. Come on, word spreads fast. You know in one place, you'll know on the other side of the world. Havi kol dovra kavu b'choy kidovra shechicha. Everything is so common. Da'afim ein pshitas rego shechicha b'chol kihila. Even though, let's say, it's not so common in every community, every small, come on, today bankruptcy is very common, very popular, much to like Rav Moshe Heinemann's taina. It's very hard to believe that you went into a real business, they'll think to yourself, I didn't realize there's a potential, you might go bankrupt. Come on, where have you been? You shouldn't be in the business world if you're not familiar with it. Now, so Rabbi Blau brings up, doesn't really deal with it. Well, Rav Asher Weiss really thinks it's not an issue, as does Rav Moshe Heinemann. However, what is an interesting point is, if this is the logic to justify it, then this is not going to work for personal loans or personal debt. This is all in the commercial setting. I go into a business deal with you, you have to realize in a business deal, I might go bust and you're just going to have to take it. But when two friends are lending money to each other, or personal chayvis, or individual chayvis, how are you going to tell me that I signed up for that? I didn't sign up for anything. I expected you that you were going to pay me back. You met me outside the shul and you asked me for money, I lent you money. Or more so, let's say tuition. I gave this shiur last week in Queens. Someone came over to me and said, "Amaisa shaya." He's on a board in a yeshiva, and a fellow claimed that he doesn't owe tuition because he went bankrupt. And he says he doesn't owe the money. So I thought it was just, Louis Yitzur type of case, a real story. Guy was in a lot of debt. And the ironic part is the guy who went bankrupt was he thought that would knock off his tuition. He missed the whole boat. He thought he'd get out of the tuition by filing bankruptcy. I think the guy told me he owed like $80,000 in tuition. It's a lot of money. So the question is, so Rav Asher Weiss writes Mefurish like this. If you turn to the last page, on the page 3, Rav Asher Weiss writes in number 25, Umikom mokim nira dein haloive p'tur mitashlum halvaz ishuyus ugemachim. Says Rav Asher Weiss, bankruptcy does not help for private or individual or lonesome gemach. Duchal toikev pshitas haregel ein el gabe hashkois v'halvaz mischorish shebehem mistaver loimar ta'adayte d'hachis savavikibol. It's in the business world. I'm making a business transaction with you. I'm going to lend you money in the business world. And I know that there's a chance you won't pay me back. Or vendors. When a person sells something to a vendor, he knows that this is part of the business world. I know there's a chance he might go bankrupt and I won't see my money. However, argues about Shavais, and this is where Moshe Heinemann is very into this as well, he believes very strongly that there is no such option of going with the sort of minog ha-seichrim when it comes to two people. What do you mean to me and you? We went into a business deal together. It's not a business. I borrowed money from you. I little things like that. That's not in the major commercial business-like experience. You can't tell me. I did the hachi. And therefore, rules of Rosh Hashanah, Allah Chalamaisa, that private loans, a guy goes to a gemach to borrow money. And then he files bankruptcy. And he's not part of from paying the gemach. You can tell me the gemach, well, maybe gemachs think about these things, but it wasn't like, I'll die to the hachi. I lent you the money because you said you needed the money. If you didn't have the money, you shouldn't have came. So therefore, according to this svara, that the reason why Dina Machus Adina works, the reason why bankruptcy works, because it's minig ha-seichrim, it has to be seichrim, it has to be the business setting. If it would be a private type of loan or private debt, or two Jews in the back room, or tuition, or a private gemach, this would not exempt the chayv. The gemach puts into a corporate entity. Maybe you can argue that the gemach knows that you might not be able to pay. But you can't tell me that it's like a business svar, like minag ha-soichrim, or minag, it's a harder sell. So that's the argument that the contemporary Achrayim make. So what I want to discuss this evening is, can we go the dina de machus de dina angle? Right? You'll argue that we have a rule that we follow the rule of the land. Rule of the land, bankruptcy is on the books. It's one of those laws. 100%. We mentioned last week that I think 96% of bankruptcies are personal. They're not companies, they're personal people filing the bankruptcy. So is Dina de Machusa Dina a viable option, or maybe the simplest option, to be able to justify bankruptcy from a halachic standpoint? Obviously, in order to answer this question, we have to get a better understanding of how Dina Machusa Dina works. Now, I'm going to put a disclaimer. This is not really the time where we're really going to get into the real lumdus of Dina Machus Adina, just a small sampling in it, just to touch upon it to see how it will affect the status of bankruptcy. So, it's a, believe it or not, the whole idea of Dina Machus Adina, everyone throws it around, everyone talks about it, you would think it would be a Mefurish Mishnah somewhere. It's not a Mefurish Mishnah anywhere. The first mention of Dina Machus Adina is by Shmuel. Shmuel is the Baal HaMemro who comes up with this catchphrase called Dina de Machus Adina. He does not give a makar for it. He doesn't give a reason for it. He just says it, and it's a bunch of places in Shas, in the Darim, and Baba Kama, Baba Basra, Gittin. It comes up a bunch of places in Shas. It's always under the banner of Omar Shmuel, Dina Machus Adina. As if Shmuel made up this concept called Dina de Machus Adina, and he never, ever, in any of the places, gives rhyme or reason for it. So we'll go with one of the sources. This is a Gemara in the Darim. The Gemara in the Darm is talking about the Mishnah over there. The Mishnah says if a person makes a neder that he wants to give away, the tax collectors are coming, and the tax collectors, you don't want to give them your money. So he basically makes a neder that this money belongs to Hekdesh. So the Gemara over there has a kasha. What do you mean? To get away from paying the tax collector? V'omar Shmuel, but Shmuel has a premise. Dina de Malchus Adina. The rule of the land is ruling. So therefore you have to pay your taxes. You can't circumvent paying your taxes by giving it away to Hekdesh or whatever it is. You have to pay your taxes. Now Shmuel doesn't give you a reason for this. He just says, fact. Dina de Machus Adina, accept it and move on. As if it's exerz a kasuv from Shmuel. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanina, Amar Rav Kana, Amar Shmuel, two answers to why this is not a kash. The Gemara gives these two answers in a couple of places of Shas. These are not reasons, but they're guidelines. Which means that even though there's a principle called Dina Malchus Dina, it's not a free-for-all. Doesn't mean the king can do whatever he wants and we just have to swallow it, because he's the king. There has to be a legitimate and somewhat fair tax collecting. When it's legitimate and fair, then it's under the banner of Dina Malchus Dina. If it's an unjust tax collection, which we'll actually talk tonight, that many Republicans argue that the way taxes are done today are not fair, or the wealthy will argue that their taxation is not fair. They're paying much more taxes than the rest of the population. Therefore, they're arguing that they're being taxed unjust. Therefore, they don't have to pay, because it's not Dina Malchus Dina anymore. Now, we'll see later tonight, there's two reasons why that's not correct. But in any case, that's where it comes from this Gemara. This Gemara is clear that if the taxing is not done in a just way, it's not binding. What does it mean? So the Ran and the Durham writes in number 4, what is it, Moichish and the Kitzva? There's no set amount. They could take whatever they want, and they're going to take beyond what's allotted to them. The Kimin Shekim, Lav Dinu, who it's not just, Ela Chamsenusa, it's theft. The Chamsenusa, the Moichish, Lav Dinu. The government is not allowed to steal from you. They have the right to tax you. They have the right to do things, but they can't steal. So therefore, this is tax. This is not fair taxation, therefore steal. What's the moiches ha'im in the elov? Shloi b'mitzvah samelach. So the second answer to the Gemara is much more simpler. We're talking about a tax that's not justified by the government. You have a bunch of corrupt tax collectors, a bunch of corrupt people in the IRS calling, knocking on your door, saying you owe money. That's not coming from the government. That's coming from corrupt people. You don't have to pay. This is the very famous Ran in Adarim. Every Ran in Adarim is famous. But this is one of the most famous Ran in Adarim about Dina Malchus Adina. Says the Ran, the Kasuv B'Taisu is the Davka V'Malchi Ovdi Kechavim. When do we apply the rule of Dina Malchus Adina? It's Davka by a non-Jewish king. Why? The Dina Malchus Adina B'Nei Sha'aretz Shaloi V'Yocha Loim Alehem Im Loim Tasu Mitzvoysai Agaresh Eschem Min Aretz. Says the Ran, what's the whole law of Dina Malchus Adina? This is my land. The king owns the land. You don't like the rules, get out of here. You're here under my rules. So you're subjected to my rules. Says the Ran, that's all fine in outside Eretz Yisrael. That's in America, in England. So we're subjected to the government. Avo b'malchi Yisrael loy. Lefish Eretz Yisrael, kol Yisrael shutfim ba. Says the Ran Adam, no one owns Eretz Yisrael. We all own Eretz Yisrael. It was given to all of us. So therefore, no one is in control of Eretz Yisrael. We don't have to keep Dina Malchus Adina in Eretz Yisrael. So many people tell you, this Ran in the Dorm is the right. You don't have to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael. You don't have to abide by any of the rules in Eretz Yisrael because there's no Dina Malchus Adina in Eretz Yisrael. The whole reason for Dina Malchus Adina is because it belongs to the government. It belongs to the king. Eretz Yisrael belongs to me. It's my land. Therefore, I don't have to pay the rules. This is the very famous misused Ran in the Dorm. Okay. The reason why this is not correct and the same reason why not paying taxes is not just sticking it to the government, is there's another concept called shutzvus. When a person is in a partnership, you have to go with whatever the partnership says to do. This is true in regular business. A person has three or four partners in a business, and he's screaming, no, I don't want to do X and Y, very often you will lose, and you have to do with what's best for the business. So taxes, and both here and in Eretz Yisrael, it's because you're part of a community. Community has a certain amount of responsibility to make sure the community survives. So not paying your taxes is not sticking it to the government. It's sticking it to your partnership of your neighbors and people in your area, and therefore you have to keep the taxes. So this is the very famous misused Ran in the Dorm. But the Ran in the Dorm gives us some form of an insight. Dina Malchus Adina is like, that's the deal. You come into my house, I could tell you, you have to take your shoes off. If you don't want to take your shoes off, you have to leave my house. So the government says it's my house. Now the argument today is, who owns America? The president doesn't own America as much as he'd love to. He's probably the only one who can afford to buy it, but he thinks he does. Who owns America? It's not like that in democratic countries. They don't really own it. It's not a bias issue. The Amor used to be the king owned it because he was the head of the army and he conquered it, became his. Okay, it's a little bit hard to understand this around Bizman Azeh, who really owns the country. The Rashbam and Baba Basra has a slightly different shot. The Rashbam and Baba Basra writes, what's the lomit for Dina Machusa? Kol masim ve'anunyus u'minhogesh ha'mishpatei melochim. All taxes and various laws and hanhagos of mishpatim from the king, shirigilim lahanik b'machusam, which are normal to be in the government, dinehu, it's halach. Why? Shekol b'nei hamalchus mekabim aleim ritzonam chukei hamelach mishpatav. You accept it upon yourself. When you move to America, you accept upon yourself keeping all of American law. And when you move to France, you're accepting all of their, every country, al das, can you walk into it, and you're accepting upon yourself all their rules. So the akasha is, well, let's say you say to yourself, I'm not accepting the rules. I want to live in America, get all the perks, and I'm not accepting the rules. Okay, so that's the question. The hilkach din gomru, therefore it is real halach. So Rav Asher Weiss doesn't like either one of these pshatim and rishayim, because none of this seems to be so binding. Let's say the Rashbam's pshat. Because I never accepted anything. I'm here because I want to get all the benefits of the country, and I like the country, but I'm not accepting any of these things on me. Who says I'm accepting any of these things? And even the Ran and the Darmish pshat's very funny. Well, because the land belongs to him, he can tell me what I can and can't do. The land belongs to him, so he can tell me, you know, how and what I have to do. That's not necessarily true. So he doesn't like either of these pshat, and he has come up with a whole different mahalach and how to learn, which maybe we'll get to. But these are just two of the very famous reasons to why Dir de Machus Adina is actually binding. Either because it's their land, their rules, or according to the Rashbam, it's because I signed up for this. When I became an American citizen, I decided I'm going to keep all the American rules. That's true too. Now the question is, so, and therefore what? Where does that become binding from halacha?
Well, we have establishing
court. Okay, good. So that we're going to get to a little later. That's the route that Rav Asher Weiss goes, and Rav Shechter goes that route. And Din Machus Din is more of a basic thing. You have to have rule and law. You can't have a free-for-all. If no one's going to pay their taxes, and no one's going to do it, the country can't exist, and countries need to exist. We'll get to that hopefully a little later this evening. So this is just a little bit of a mere sampling of Din al-Malchus Adin, some of the reasons in the Rishayim. What we need to get to tonight, and this is really very important for our shir, is how far does Din al-Malchus Adin reach? You know, everything that's financially relevant to the country is Din al-Malchus Adin. To what is there a limit to where Din al-Malchus Adin ends, and we start as Jews discussing where it says the Chesh HaMishpah? So there's Gemara in Gittin Daf Yud. The Mishnah says, "Kol ha'shtarois ha'olim ba'arkoi shel v'yichavim." All legal documents that come out from the secular court, "Alfa pishechais meim v'yichavim," they're signed by two goyim. The witnesses are two goyim. They sign on the legal document. K'sherim. This is a kosher shtar in the Jewish court. Even though normally we throw this out, this is a secular paper. It has nothing Jewish about it. Says the Mishnah, it's good. Chot mikigid enoshim v'shechur revodim. If this would be any legal document except for a get, and if it's a shtar shechur of an evet, those are two important type of chaloisim that you need to have a Jewish person on it. No, not true. Even a get, a shtar shechur that's made in a secular court with non-Jewish edim, that's going to be binding. So the Gemara says, one second, kaposik v'toni, it says in the least according to the Tanakamo, lo yishna mecha, lo yishna matono. Any legal document, as long as it's not a get or shtar shechur, is binding if it's written by goyim in goyish court, which means whether it's a shtar mecher or a shtar matana. So Gemara says, one second, how can this be? Bishlam mecher, I understand. If let's say two people want to buy and sell something, so what they do is they don't only have to use the shtar as a kinyan, they can use the shtar as a shtar raya. And the kinyan will be done with something else, whether it be kesef, chazok, or whatever they may be buying. So then the Gemara says, okay, then I can understand that the shtar is just a raya ba'alma, so we'll take a shtar from a goyish court as a raya ba'alma. Because it's not what we call a shtar chalois. It's not creating the chalois. It's just proving that Reuben and Shimon went through a business deal. So that we'll accept. But says, when you have a shtar matona, if two people want to give each other a gift, how do you transfer a gift? So one of the ways is a shtar. So this shtar that was written up by two goyim, signed by two goyim, stamped with a goyish stamp, was made up, and this is the shtar that's going to give me the ownership of this object. How on earth can that work? Frakti Gemara, Bishlomo, the mecher mechiyov zuzi kamai, who did koni? Bishlomo, if I want to sell you something, so the shtar is not what transfers the ownership, or we'll break it down. The shtar is not what creating the chalois. The chalois is being created by whatever the kinyan you use. The shtar is just to prove it. So therefore says the Gemara, Mechiyov zuzi kemayu hu dekona, v'shtar raya ba'almo. Tilo yov zuzi kemayu li havi mirin afshai, because from the shtar, I would have never written a shtar unless I knew I had the money. Fine, so the shtar, Rashi explains that the shtar is only raya ba'almo, that will let from a goy. In fact, the Gemara elamatona b'maiko koni, light by hashtara. You can't use this shtar to acquire a matana. Why? This shtar is a piece of paper. It's worthless. There's nothing Jewish about it. How can it work? And for the Gemara Mashmuel, Dina de Malchus Adina. Dina de Malchus Adina. We as Jews are bound to keep law of the land. Law of the land accepts secular courts. Secular courts, secular edim, it's all binding. Okay? The Iba Yisayimah, says the Gemara, another answer. Tana chutz mikigite nashim. You read the Mishnah wrong. When it says in the Mishnah that according to the Tanakhama, there's exceptions, there's not just exceptions of a get and a shtar shechur, there's another exception because any shtar that's actually doing something, included in that would be a shtar matana, which means according to the second Tarot of the Gemara, you would not be allowed to give a shtar matana written up in a secular court. Why? Because a shtar matana is actually doing a chalois. So now, what's the machloek between the two pshatim and the Gemara? The first pshat in the Gemara said, "Din machosadina, all is good." The second test of the Gemara says, "No, you're right, it doesn't work." So does the second test of the Gemara not hold the din machosadina? Are the two terutzim in this Gemara arguing on Shmuel's premise? That seems very hard to believe, because every place in Shas where we come across it, no one ever argues on Shmuel. It's amazing. Shmuel made this statement without no raya, no reason or rhyme, and no one ever argued on him. And it's binding. Din machosadina is binding. You can test it. Wherever you come across the Gemara, or the Gemara uses Dina Machosdina, it's always going to be associated with Shmuel. Shmuel is the Baal HaMemor. No one argues on him, and no one questions him. But it seems to be that this second teretz of the Gemara seems to be arguing on Shmuel. So the Rashba is very bothered by this. And the Rashba writes in number 7, he says, V'ikamanda omad dahani trei lishli pligi adodi. That the two lishanis of the Gemara are actually an argument. According to the first teretz of the Gemara, according to Shmuel, that Din Machusadina is extended to legal documents, and therefore if you want to use a Jewish document, you can use a Jewish document under Din Machusadina. But according to Lishna Bas, the second Teretz of the Gemara rejects that. Doesn't work. Now, the Ikamad and Mepharish, the Rashba says another Pshat, then no. The two Teretz of the Gemara are not argument. The first Teretz of the Gemara is talking about where the government is actually gets involved. The second answer is the government has no rules about this. The government says you guys figure out how you want to have your legal documents. We're not involved. So then everyone is in agreement. Then the Rashba presents a third possibility, which is very negated to our sugya. Says the Rashba, there's no way to argue and say, well, we don't pass the din of machusadina. It's always accepted in Shas. Says the Rashba, possibility maybe din of the machusadina is limited to what? To things that are for the benefit of the government. The government can care less how two people transfer documents, how two people give gifts. The government can care less. So if the government doesn't care, it doesn't benefit the government, it's not under the banner of din of the machusadina. That's the two terutzim of the Gemara. The first terutz of the Gemara holds, no, din al-machusadina is for everything monetary, is din al-machusadina. The second terutz of the Gemara says, no, we're talking about over two people trying to write a document that says, I'm giving you a gift. The government can care less. What hanoah does the government get out of this? Then we don't apply din al-machusadina. Now, the Rashba rejects this pshat, but he's opening us up to such a possibility that one could learn that the reason why din al-machusadina doesn't work in the Gemara is because din al-machusadina only works when the government gets pleasure out of it. Now, why is this negated to us? This is very negated to bankruptcy. How much pleasure does the government get out of allowing bankruptcy to go through? Not only that, it might actually hurt the government. Why? Because some of the things that are moichel in bankruptcy are dead to the government. So therefore, you can't tell me that bankruptcy is letoivas hamelech. The government, the king, whatever, the government doesn't gain out of you going bankrupt. So if this pshat is correct, so then you would not be able to extend din machusadina, at least according to the second teretz of the Gemara. If you hold like the first teretz of the Gemara, din machusadina goes for everything. If you hold like the second teretz of the Gemara, it's limited. So how do we paskin? So the Rambam Shita seems to be somewhat clear. The Rambam writes about chazmav of loyer shtar shekatzah b'choloshet b'choksav. If you have a shtar that's written in any language with any writing, in my yasuya ketikun shtori Yisrael, it was written like a good Jewish document. Sheini choil mizdayef, it can't be forged. You can't add to it, you can't subtract from it. And the Edom are Jewish. The Edom, the Kroisoyne, can read it. That's a regular star. But any star with the two signatures on the bottom of the paper are non-Jews. That's not accepted. Except when it comes to star Mekach u'Memkar, v'shtarei Choyf, and a star Choyf. So what do you see from the Rambam? The Rambam holds that with your shtari mekuch memkar and shtar choiv, which is only a raya ba'alma, you're allowed to use from a goy. The Rambam left that shtar matona. What about shtar matona? So the Magid Mishnah assumes that the Rambam holds that the second tariff to the Gemara. The second tariff to the Gemara holds, no, you can't use a goy for a shtar matona. Why can't you use a goy for a shtar matona, says the Magid Mishnah? Because a shtar matona doesn't help the government. Doesn't benefit the government. If it doesn't benefit the government, we don't apply dina, the machusa dina. Yes, assuming.
Okay, so you could say it's all in the world, no anarchy.
Well, again, something like two. you know, what hanah does the government get? You know, they can say, you guys figure it out how you want to, you know.
Why is that? I'm in control of the system. I mean, I have a system that you're complying.
Okay, so the typical examples that Gemara gives, the Dilmachos Dina, is the government's a lot of taxation, which is a direct physical and hanah, a financial hanah. Then there's, you know, knocking down, trees, build bridges, things like that. So that's somewhat more of a hanah. You're arguing maybe there might be secondary hanah, which might be true in bankruptcy also, because the government gets benefit of everyone being able to. That's an argument that Achren do make. Yes, we'll have to see a little bit more about that. So that's the Rambam sheet. Rabbi Vad Yosef has a tshuva in the Chavadas Chelik Dalid, where he also assumes that this pshat in the Rambam, although there are those who learn the Rambam differently. The assumption is that the Rambam passes at the second teretz of the Gemara. Comes along the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch, and the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch basically cuts and pastes this Rambam exactly. Number 9 is the Chashimish B'Simin Samaches. The Mechaber seems to say the exact same words of the Rambam, which leads us to believe that the Mechaber is of the opinion that Dina Machus Adina does not extend to things that don't better the government, which means that Svardim, who follow the Mechaber, would only be able to use Dina Machus Adina for things that are for the Hanas HaMelech, things that actually enrich the king or the government. Things that do not enrich the king or the government are not bound by Dina Machus Adina. So let's say, for example, one of the cases that Rabbi Moshe Heinemann talked about was the seatbelt rule. Wearing a seatbelt, is that bound by Dina Machus Adina? Now, we could argue that seatbelts are not because of Dina Machus Adina. Therefore, you have to protect yourself. It's dangerous. You have to do whatever you can do to protect yourself. Right, it might be the Raisa of Shomer Nafshach. You have to protect yourself. That's an argument. Rabbi Moshe Heinemann was going that route, that he's suggesting that things that are not directly negated, it doesn't really necessarily benefit the government if you wear or don't wear a seatbelt. Well, he was saying, well, maybe it indirectly does, because there's going to be the insurance companies and all these other things are going to go up. So it does indirectly benefit the government. So he was mesupik about how far does this go. Now that's all if you're a svardi, if you pass him like the Mechaber. However, we're going to see in a minute that the Ramah has a different spin on it. But keep in mind that the Mechaber seems to be very clear that Dina Machus Adina only extends to things that benefit the government. The marshal, every year before Purim, someone always comes up with this idea that kids under 21 are not allowed to drink on Purim because of Dina Malchus Adina. That's always an argument made. Now again, Yesh Lodon, if that's right for many reasons, one of them being that, again, the government does not have control of everything we do. Dina Malchus Adina doesn't mean if the government says you have to work on Shabbos, we work on Shabbos. That's not Dina Malchus Adina. Dina Malchus Adina is things that are relative to mominess. Underage drinking is not mominess. Now, underage drinking might be under another banner of Toyelas L'Rabim. Maybe, that we can discuss. But Din Machus Din is clearly not a mominous issue, and therefore it would be a little bit of a hard sell to say that drinking, that they're not drinking, or children drinking under 21 would be under Din Machus Din, or I think would be a very difficult sell.
There is no monetary.
No,
there could be non-monetary benefits.
Which depends if that's enough to be considered. Right.
So
Moshe Heinemann was arguing it's indirect monetary, because if not, more crashes, and then the insurance rates go up, and then it hurts people. Right. That was his argument. So with underage drinking, maybe it's also like that. If more kids drink underage, so what's going to happen is more kids are not going to be successful in life. We're going to have to put them on government funding. I'm not sure where it ends. You know, everything eventually can end up back to mominess. I'm not sure. But it's better for business. That's right. It has to be better for business, right? That's always the old question of where taxes come in. That's with the legalizing marijuana, things like that. So the Mechaber writes in another place, in Simon Shin Samach Tes, also very interesting halacha. V'chein melech shekas alechem me'avodav. The king gets mad at one of his servants, v'shamashov, mevnei ha-medina, v'lokach zudeyu. Right? I think Trump would love to do this. Right? You get mad at someone, you confiscate his property. You don't like him, you confiscate his property. Oy chatzeri, you don't like what he said about you, so you confiscate his property. You don't like the article he ran, so you take away his newspaper. Einai gezel. That's not considered stealing. Right? If you buy this from the government, you're not considered buying from a ganif. That's a legitimate thing. You're not allowed to take them away. That's, the king can do that. But the king does something that's not on the books. I mean, if there's a law on the books, that's dinam chosidina. But if the king decides he's going to pick one specific group and target one group, not like all the other groups, one specific gender, race, religion, that is not the Dina Machus Adina. It says the Mechaber, that's not allowed. Anything that's universal, and it's not individual, in a gezel. B'chol sheyikach me'ish zeh b'lvach, like kadas yidua l'chol, el'chomas es zeh harei zeh gezel. So again, you know, that's what they did in Germany. They made it that there was one group that was different than the rest. They had no rules and no regulations. They were not allowed to own property, and they confiscated all the things. That was with the Jews. Everyone else had one rule. So according to the Mechaber, when you single out one specific group of people, that is not under the banner of the Mechuzdin. That's called Chamsanusa. That's not allowed. Says the Ramah. Hagav im chokug lebal umnes achas. Let's say there's one list of rules for one specific trait. Kigoyin shechokak lemal v'beribis eizadavar. Yeshoyimim doleimin abadin mechuzdin ahoyl v'ein chokug lekol. This is a little more complicated. Let's say there's specific rules for one job and other rules for another job. That's not binding. It's got to be across the board. Says the Ramah, Yeshayim, to le'amina dina machusadina ella b'masim u'machsim hatuyim b'karka. Says the Ramah, dina machusadina is only for agriculture, land-based things. Nothing to do with loans, money. They can't touch that. They can only touch things on the ground. Where does this come from? So they want to attribute this to the Ran and the Darn. The Ran and the Dharm said, it's my land. Oh, you're in control of the land. Your land, so anything that's land-based. Anything that's not land-based, you have no control of it. This is what Achrenim want to say. Now again, Rabbi Shmuel also argues on that. Land-based doesn't mean the land. It means you're here because I let you be here. So I control everything you do, not only the land. But that's what those who want to argue. That's one sheet. So if you hold like that, so then Dina Machuz Dina does not touch bankruptcy. Unless we're talking about maybe real estate. If it would just be regular money, no property involved, the government can't get involved in anything that's not property related. The yesh aimim, the yesh cholkin, the svilu daimina b'chol davar din l'machus adina. No. All things. Now again, the Mefarshim say it's not all things. It's all monetary things. Doesn't mean they could tell you that you have to work on Shabbos. It means things that are relevant to money. L'chein ha-malval ha-mashkin, if a person lends on a mashkin, yochel ha-moichir ach-ha-shono, he's allowed to sell it after a year, hoyo l'chein din ha-machos dina. That's a secular law. L'chein hu ikr. Sounds like from the Ramah that the deciding factor is not like the Mechaber who said it has to benefit the government. It doesn't have to benefit the king. It has to be anything that's relevant. Kol, the law of the Ramah is aminu b'chol davar. So according to the Ramah, let's bring it back to bankruptcy. So according to the Ramah, bankruptcy should be under this banner of Kol Dover, and Dina Machus Adina should exempt bankruptcy. There's only one major problem. There's another Ramah, not too many Sifim later, where the Ramah seems to contradict himself. Says the Ramah, to l'amina Dina Machus Adina el b'dover sheyesh b'hanol l'melech, Dina Machus Adina is limited to those things that bring pleasure to the king, oy shu l'takonas b'nei ha-medina, or was established to better the people. Avaloishi doinu b'dine goyim. Says the Ramah, doesn't mean that all of a sudden now everything is secular. Dim came, but Tatos called Dini Yisro. We're going to throw out all Chayshim Mishpat. All Chayshim Mishpat goes out the window. Says the Ramah, no. We don't throw out all Chayshim Mishpat. We keep Chayshim Mishpat. All we do is we take away anything that either benefits the king, which is what the Mechaber said, but then he opens it up a little bit more. Or anything that's l'takonas b'nei ha-medina. So here's where the argument starts. Is bankruptcy l'takonas b'nei ha-medina? Isn't that what bankruptcy is? To help the people of the country be able to bounce back from a difficult time. So the simple reading of this Ramah would say that bankruptcy is under the banner of Dina D'Malchus Adina. But again, but now we have a steamer in Ramah. What does Ramah really hold? Is it everything or is it only those things that benefit the people? So the truth is, it's not clear. The Sma and Ramah Yishev Feinstein discuss how to be Miyash this Mechaber. The way the Miyash of the Ramah is that the Ramah really thinks it's open-ended. But what the Ramah meant over here was lafuke, going to secular court. Why don't we say we should all go to secular court with every issue, Dina L'Machus Adina? Says the Sma, that's exactly what the Ramah was telling you. Don't do that. Secular court is still off limits. However, when we're talking about money-related issues, it's more open-ended, anything that's for the benefit of the Medina. Now, clearly, the Ramah doesn't think it's like the Mechaber. It's the only thing that benefits the government. It's either benefits the government or benefits the people. So according to the Ramah, one could justify a little easier bankruptcy law by saying bankruptcy law was done to benefit the people. Now, the argument that is that it only benefits half the people. Right? It only benefits the guy who's in debt. The other side, the guy who has the loan, he's losing tons of money. He would much rather not to have bankruptcy. So how does that work? It benefits half society. Is that enough? Well, some people are happy, right? The guy who's in debt is thrilled to hear that he's released from his debt. But the guy who's owed the money is not very happy. He would much rather not have this rule on the books. So how does that work? Now, it's clear that the Ramah Shita is broadened. Because there's another Mechaber in Ramon, number 12, on the next page, where the Mechaber is talking about a very interesting case. We learned about Metziah, in Eilam Metzias, that there's something called Shatz for Nahar. Right? If, let's say, there's this massive river that's unbelievable flooding, that is just pushing everything away. This was actually Negea when we had the hurricanes here in this neighborhood. This was a Halacha L'maaseh case, where you have this just massive flood, and just people see their things just being going down the block. So the Halacha is based on the Gemara, that all that stuff becomes Miyayish. It's all Hefker. Says the Gemara, even if you hear the owner screaming and yelling, I'm not Miyayish, everything is free. So if you would be out there during the hurricane and you wanted to gather things from the street, from a Chesh and Mishpat point of view, it would be completely permitted. So writes the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch, number 12. Comes along the Ramah. The Ramah says, not so fast. But let's say the government has rules. I don't think the government has a law that when there's a hurricane and things are being, you know, going down the street, you can grab anything you want. I have no idea. Maybe there is. I'm not sure. But says the Ramah, if there'd be a law on the books that prohibits that, that would be dina malchusa din. So clearly, you see from the Ramah, that doesn't really benefit the government so much. Rabbi Asher Weiss is not even sure how that benefits society. Don't say it benefits society because this way a guy doesn't lose his thing. But again, the Ramah clearly is a little bit more broad in his dinah malchusa dinoi than for the opinion of the Mechaber. That's the sheet of the Ramah. So according to the Mechaber, a very difficult sell to justify bankruptcy. According to the Ramah, a little easier. And there's one last sheet that needs to be discussed. That's the sheet of the Shach. The Shach has a chiddush. He writes it in two places. That dinah malchusa dinoi is not applicable where it's going directly against the Torah. Dinah malchusa dinoi is only when the Torah says nothing on the topic and the government says something on the topic. So then, Dina Mechusa Dina binds you to the rules of the government. But the Torah says explicitly, lehepech of this, you don't listen to Dina Mechusa Dina. That's the ruling of the Shachar number 13. Now, clearly the Ramah didn't hold like that. Because we know there's halacha on the books in Bab Metziah, that Zut Yishayam, it's mutter. And here the Ramah says you have to return it. So clearly the Ramah and the Shach disagreed, and that's clear from the piece of the Shach. If you accept the Shach, so then Dina Mechusa Dina will not help for bankruptcy. Bankruptcy on the books. We have rules of Chesh Mishpat. The rule of Chesh Mishpat is you pay the chayv until the day you die. And that's it. There's no such thing called bankruptcy. So if the Shach is right, then bankruptcy would not be a viable option. Now the Chazanish has a kash on this Shach. He says it's not true. The Torah says something on everything. You gotta research it and you gotta figure out what it is. But to say that Dina Machos Dina is when the Torah says nothing, the Torah says something about everything. You just gotta figure out what it is. But there's many Rishayim who say like the Shach. And the Bavad Yosef sounds like, to me, in his Tshuva Nechavadas, he thinks this is the accepted custom. That we go like the Shach. So if you go like the Shach, we definitely throw out bankruptcy. Not even an option. Because bankruptcy is clearly against the Torah, so there's nothing to talk about. So these are the three points of discussion. You have the Mechaber sheet, the Ramah sheet, and the Shach sheet. I couldn't help myself putting down a tshuva from Rav Moshe, which is not really negated to our sugya tonight, but I had to put it down. Rav Moshe is discussing a tshuva in 1980, where there was an apparent theft of the regents. Apparently Yeshiva Bachrim stole the regents. And they sent Rav Moshe Shaila, was this correct? I couldn't pass up such a tshuva. This was such a geshmaka tshuva, I had to put it down. I couldn't, especially this time of the year, we just finished Regents, I had to put it down. So, what? Oh, really? So Rav Moshe writes, this tshuva was in 1980.
So this is 1974.
Okay. So I guess it already happened.
So Rav Moshe,
you guys see what Rav Moshe writes at the end of the tshuva. So Rav Moshe writes, I actually brought this tshuva down because it's relevant to our sugya. Because the question is, does Din Machus Adin extend to things that are not financially driven? Let's say, for example, you want to build your sukkah middle of the street. This is an issue that Tzvika Reisman talks about. He writes a tshuva, he writes a shout out to Rav Moshe Weiss. In Minchas Asher, he responds to Tzvika Reisman. And in Rotz Katzvi, he has a whole discussion. You want to you go to Williamsburg, I shouldn't have said that, but you go to certain communities over sukkahs, and you see illegally built sukkahs all over. They're on... they build them on the fire escapes, which is illegal and dangerous. They build them in the middle of the streets. They build them wherever they want. So the shayla was, did the machus didn't prevent you from doing things like that? So that was the shayla that was presented to Rav Moshe Weiss. So he goes back and forth, he talks about other things. Let's say, for example, building codes, how to build buildings. Do you have to build a building with the building codes? You can say, nah, I'm not interested. Or did the machus didn't force you? Now, some of the building codes might be also pikuach nefesh. Someone was just telling me last week, Manal and Yeshiva doesn't do fire drills. I mean, you don't do fire drills. You'd rather not know what to do when a fire happens. Forget the rules. Forget regulations. Forget Din Machuzin. Forget Chil Hashem. What about for the kids who need to know what to do when a fire happens? I must boggle my mind to hear such a thing. But let's say you want to argue that. Where's it say? It's not money. Din Machuzin is money. Where's the money? Show me money. If it's not money, I don't have to keep it. Okay, I'm not so sure that's the case. So Rabbi Asher Weiss brings this from Moshe's Tshuva. So what does Moshe's Tshuva say? He says, "Hini b'dovah she'lo se'a ma'asha shoma she'b yeshivas matirin la'talmidim." That the yeshivas permit the students lignaves at tshuvas la'hasheilois b'bechonei ha'siyum sh'oisim ha'medina regions. They make it at the end of the year called the regions. K'dei l'hayres l'kabas ha'tudah she'gam rubitayv. So they can get the diploma that they did well in all their classes. The doctor of Moshe in the dove is awesome. Loi rak medina d'machusa. So the Moshe, not only because of dina d'machusa, so this is where Rabbi Asher Weiss is right. Dina d'machusa, there's no money over here. Where's the money? Teretz says, no. Dina d'machusa means you have to abide by the laws, and the laws are don't steal. Ela medina ha'teira, it's mid'araisa. Now that's also a shayla. Dina d'machusa, dina d'rabbanan or mid'araisa. So stick it from the Moshe's truth, it sounds like it's only d'rabbanan. Ve'ein ze rak g'nevas das. Not only says Ramesh, this is Gnevas Das. Shagamkin Asr. First of all, Gnevas Das is also Asr. Kedama Shmuel Bechulin, Shasr Lignev Das Chavirev, Afilo Deitish Al Akum. Okay, you're not allowed to steal Das of an Akum either. Vekosher Kein Hocha, Shu Gnevas Das of Kulial Maf Lisro. You're fooling everyone. Fooling the whole population. Ela du Gam Gnevas Dover Mamish. So Ramesh, you're actually stealing something. To who kishi yirtza lefarna sasi b'meshach hazman, when these guys eventually need jobs, what's going to happen? L'haska asma itzel echad la'avoy basokov, v'roitzim b'roiv ha'pome b'mishe gomer hetev l'mudov d'chol. Most jobs want someone who did well in his secular studies. V'hiyir la'ha tu'udo, eich shegomer b'toiv. He's going to present his diploma that this guy was 100 average. V'al smach ze kibluo, shezeu gnevas mamin namish. I always thought this is the reason why you're not allowed to cheat on a test. That was what I was always under the impression. A person cheats on a test, it's Gnevas Das and Gnevas, like Ramesh is saying. Why? Because what's going to happen now? Your GPA is much higher. So now when it comes to colleges, you're going to get into a better college. When it comes to a job, they're going to look at your test score and say, oh, this guy is this type of person and we're going to hire him. Assuming that the argument could be made that that's just not the way people do things. They don't look at these things and they don't care. I'm not so sure. But Ramesh writes, V'ein lo yadua ben yoni iske panosa v'masu matan. They don't know anything about the business. V'mei levadai osir. Af! This is the best part. What happened to the chesmen of Bittel Torah? I love that taina. I hear it all the time. Bittel Torah! Says Ramesh, V'ein lo yadua ben yoni iske panosa v'masu matan. Af! This is the best part. What happened to the chesmen of Bittel Torah? I love that taina. I hear it all the time. Bittel Torah! Says Ramesh, V'ein lo yadua ben yoni iske panosa v'masu matan. Af! This is the best. Says the Ramesh, "Vim choshka nafshe b'teira." Taka, this guy is his whole life is teira. Ain't like lidoik shem aliyada kolkach v'layil esim teiva liyos. So what's he so worried about? He's so choshka b'teira. He lives a life like b'shem bayachoy. So money will form an hashemayim. Doesn't have to work. Avlo emes she'ain b'zeinian bittel teira. Says Ramesh, honestly, studying for secular subjects is not bittel teira. The me'achash ohelich lomod echol hurak atlus ba'alma. Says Ramesh, a beautiful idea. These kids are lazy. This whole idea of not wanting to take English is just an excuse. They don't want to work. They don't want to be lazy. So Ramesh threw out this whole idea. Ramesh writes at the end of the truth. He says he doesn't believe for a second that any yeshiva bacha would do such a thing. He writes this is all made up, what we call today fake news, just to slander yeshivas and yeshiva bachim. Ramesh says, I can't believe a yeshiva bacha would do such a thing. That's how he ends off the truth. Yeah, and a chrabi. That would be some form of geneva. Or maybe not direct geneva, indirect geneva. That's what I always thought with the problem with cheating on tests was, like what Marisha says, that you're causing later on that you might get it. So the argument could be today that's not the way people look. They don't look at these things, they don't care about these things, and they'll give you a job for other reasons. I'm not sure. But that's Ramesh's tshuva. So what's important to this tshuva is Ramesh makes the argument that dinah machos dinah is not only when it's money, it's other things as well. But back to the issue at hand, I know it really wasn't on the sugya, but I couldn't pass up such a beautiful tshuva from Ramesh Feinstein this time of the year, where I'm sure there are kids who probably did things like cheating on the regents, which according to Ramesh is the same thing. Taking the actual regents and looking at your friend's paper is the exact same thing called cheating. It doesn't make much of a difference. So the question is, we're left with now, where does everything drop with regard to the Mechaber, the Ramah, and the Shach? So there's an interesting tshuva from the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, the son-in-law by Reb Lazer Gordon. The Telzer Rosh Yeshiva in the late 1800s and early 1900s was Reb Blach. No, his father, Reb Yosef Yehuda Blach. He died in 1930. So he was the Rav and the Rosh Yeshiva of Telz. So I was talking about an interesting Shaila, where after World War I, the currency changed. And because the currency changed, people lost a lot of money. So the question was, how does that work with Dina Machuz Adina? So he comes up with an interesting chap. He says that according to the Shach, you can bend halacha, but you can't completely forget it. Meaning his lumdus is that when the Shach says Dina Machuz Dina can't contradict halacha, that means to say is you can't completely eradicate a halacha. But let's say, I don't want to eradicate the halacha. I want to slightly bend it, but still keep it in place. Let's say, for example, instead of bankruptcy being valid, you'll say, you know what, we'll cut the debt into half. I'm not completely forgetting the Torah. I'm just kind of playing around with the Torah. He thinks that's okay. But if you're going to completely forget the Torah and throw it out legamri, that is not allowed under the din of machus adin. So the argument can be made again. If you're going to make partial payments, let's say you give 40 cents on the dollar, 10 cents on the dollar, so you're not completely forgetting the chayv, you're just moderating the chayv. So it could be, according to him, that would be under the ban of din machus adin. Okay, I think we ran out of time. I don't know if we're going to talk about it next week, but halach l'maisa, it needs further discussion to whether or not bankruptcy is valid under the premise of Dina de Machusa Dina.